election 2020. Who's going to win? Who cares? At least that's what the markets are going to tell us. That's coming up on the show today.
From the streets of San Antonio, straight to your wallet, it's Jake's 2 cents on Jake of All Trades.
All right, welcome back. My name is Kirk Barbera, and I'm not a financial expert.
And I'm Jake Rivas. I am a financial expert, but together, Kirk and I talk about financial planning topics, we review the economy, and look at financial articles online, all with the express purpose of helping our listeners build wealth today and into the future.
And today is all about president election days to come. And I loved your introduction, like, who cares? And I think there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
You know, especially in given in the immediate term.
Sure.
And it's a really contentious, weird election. And you found a really good, I don't know what to call this, like a white paper or something.
Yeah, it was a presentation that I actually listened in on. So okay. a lot of people that are a lot smarter than me put this presentation together. But I thought it was a really great way to evaluate the impact of the election in the short term.
Yeah. Yeah. So the paper or the presentation, which is 2020 U.S. presidential election, 10 truths, no matter who wins. And we're going to do 5 of those truths on this episode. So we do the first 5 truths. We'll talk about them and then stick around for part 2 for the other 5. Now, anything you want to say to kind of get started on these, like to kind of set it up?
The only setup is really there's a lot of rhetoric around just how contentious this election feels. And it feels like levels of anxiety are heightened at an unnecessary level because of constant comments and things that we're reading about and hearing about. And so with this, what this presentation did was just take a look back historically at a lot of different factors that you can use to evaluate the economy and market performance mm-hmm. under different presidential terms. And so I just, when we go through this, it's really about trying to help you become more comfortable with your financial plan during the year, like during this year in particular. Even if you have no control over what the election outcome is going to be. And so this is really just providing some data points that say it doesn't really matter who wins. Obviously it matters who wins for other purposes. But for the purpose of our show, what we're talking about is protecting your money and developing a financial plan. This we're going to go through this. It's just to try to help you feel a little more confident that the end of the world isn't approaching.
Well, that's good. You can make me feel better because I tend, as a non-financial planner person, I tend to look at things like I tend to bring the show into doom and gloom sometimes when it comes to this election, especially. So you could help me specifically by explaining some of the basics, you know, and we've talked about some of these things before, I think. And it's really important, though, to put them together as it's, you know, there are bad things and we need to figure out how to focus and fix them. But, you know, I do agree, like in the short to medium term, you know, it's not going to be the end of the world and like literally the end of the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's something we need to get through basically.
Yeah.
And hopefully get better at as a country and as a world.
And I think too, this presentation does an excellent job of illustrating how little influence the president, whoever is in charge, has over financial markets and the economy. So we'll also discover that. It's a pretty interesting take.
That'll be interesting. Yeah, I'd like to see that. Because I mean, that's how I think it should be. I think the president should have almost no say over the fight. Or I would say, personally, if I was king of the world, of the universe, I would say the president has absolutely no say in the economy at all. Like, generally. Marketplaces, finances, economy. Basically, you know, get your police in order, get your military in order, and have good court systems. Leave the rest for us to do. That would be me as king of the universe. That's not how it works, though. So I'm interested to hear how they don't have as much power or influence as I think or believe or, you know, see them as having.
Influence is the word, because of course they're very powerful. The president is the most powerful person in the country, so lots of power. But
I think I'm the most powerful person in the country.
Oh,
and this show is the most influential.
Absolutely, it is the most influential show ever.
Ever. Even though Joe Rogan just got $100 million to go on Spotify.
We're right behind him. We're right behind him.
Yeah, we're 99.9 right there. Okay, so let's jump into this guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to share screen a little bit so people can see what's on here.
And so if you're just listening to this episode, we will certainly explain what's being presented on the screen. The visuals aren't that important, but but they do help illustrate the point. So the first one that we have here is we want to look at just stock market performance over different presidents' administrations. And so what the chart here is showing is we have it plotted out here on an X and Y axis. So along the Y axis is annualized stock performance. So how the market has performed from a percentage basis. And then across the bottom, the X axis, that's our realized GDP growth. So how the economy grew during these administrations. And we're going all the way back to 1957. So what we want to see is, okay, a lot of people say that, you know, Democrats, under a Democratic leadership, the markets perform better, or under a Republican leadership, markets perform better or worse. When, if you look at this data here, you can see that markets have performed well under both parties since 1957.
So just so we're clear, this is the one with all the presidential heads.
Yes, the presidential heads.
Yeah, presidential
all
terms.
Their faces. So the dot where it puts it is essentially on the plotted on the line. What was their GDP growth, their economic growth during their term, and also what was the market returns during their term?
Okay, and so can you give us an example?
Yeah.
Like,
so
use
if
Carter.
We look at, let's take Trump. He's right there.
No, use Carter. I don't want to.
Oh, Carter.
Well, let's save Trump.
Right there in the middle. So an example here, Carter, he was a 2-term president, right?
Yeah. I don't think so.
Oh, okay. So maybe
I should know this. We're Americans.
Yeah.
But it was before my time, I guess.
Yeah. So Carter is right there hovering around about a 3% GDP growth rate during his time as president. And the market averaged about 10% rate of return on the investments.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Oh, the 10% here.
Yeah.
And annualized GDP growth.
3% annualized GDP growth. So middle of the road growth, decent return on investments. Now you can see all these presidents' heads kind of floating around. There's quite a good mix of.
Well, Kennedy and Johnson had 5% and 5.5 annualized GDP growth.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
So Kennedy and Johnson were the two strongest economies under their administration. However, their market performance was slightly lower than several of the other administrations, right? If you look at, there's only two administrations that fall to negative rates of return over their term in the White House: George W. Bush and Nixon. And if we look at when these administrations started their presidency, right? George W. Bush came into office right before the tech bubble, which caused a recession. And then he left office in 2008, just before the financial crisis. So as the financial crisis was starting to play out. So he kind of suffered from two poor timing instances, right, of just being in the White House at that time, which is why his performance down here has fallen. That doesn't necessarily, though, speak to the Republican strategy or, you know, any type of partisan strategy of how they chose to run the country or the government at that time. That was what the economy was doing then. And he happened to be in charge, right? But he had entered just before the tech bubble burst and left just as the financial crisis had started to collapse.
Well, so wouldn't one argument be that, for instance, the 2000 crash, the bubble, the 99 bubble, .com bubble, and even the 2001 crash was the result of the leadership of the former party. That's what they'll often say, right? Is that the Clinton administration led to that crash. And then you could argue that the 2008 crash was under the leadership of George W. Bush, right? So that one he is more responsible for. And then that didn't. And then with, you know, under Obama, of course, there wasn't any crash until the end of Trump's term, basically.
Right.
Right. So right. You know, so I think that's a good argument for saying that Obama's term actually led to an era of prosperity that lasted even into the next, you know, president's term. But do you see what I'm saying? Where it's like,
sure. Yeah.
You know, I do hear that argument a lot where it's like, you know, it's blamed on the one before. And, you know, Trump uses that rhetoric all the time that, you know, sure, I have the greatest economy and that's what I did. And, oh, this was actually caused by my predecessor or something. Right.
Right. But I mean, George W. was a 2-term president. So I think that logic that you just said applies a bit more in the latter half of what happened. So the financial collapse in 2007 and 2008 under his watch, right? But that was a systemic problem with regulations for banks and lenders, which isn't necessarily overseen by the president, right? So it's not that he isn't responsible, but it's there's less influence there is what I'm because of what the problem was with the economy.
Okay. I mean,
during his term,
I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out is what, you know, like obviously there's, some aspect where you can argue they have little influence, but it's hard to say that they have no influence. Like I know, you know, and so the question is then how much influence do they have and how much should we worry? Right. Like, right. Is this going to be another night? Like, is the 2020s going to be another 1930s? Right. Like that's, I think, what's on a lot of people's mind in terms of finances. Like, are we going to have, you know, obviously
you're talking about the recession.
Yeah. And just the recession and like no growth, like zero growth, which I think I believe, like my personal belief right now is that we will see zero growth for the next couple of years minimum.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that does matter for a lot of reasons, for new jobs, for, you know, going up, gaining up in the corporate ladder, for starting a business, right? Like all that stuff matters. Now maybe stocks might be going up for a variety of reasons.
Right. And that's where this chart is what we're looking at here. Cause this is really just talking about market performance. So when you think about from a very specific concern that people often present or that I've heard the argument, well, this president or this candidate is going to collapse the market, right? There's really not an indication that suggests that that's going to occur. Over the past 75 years, the S&P 500's delivered an average annual rate of return of 11%. So, and that's under both Democratic and Republican administrations. Okay. So we've had some recessions in there and, you know, we've had a lot of stuff happen in the last 75 years. So that just gives us one data point to suggest that actually the markets don't really care who's in office. The markets are going to do what they're going to do.
Okay.
Makes sense?
Kind of. I think it'll be interesting to hear I understand that this is a historical truth.
Right.
That looking at all the data, but I guess for me, the question is still in like 19. So this doesn't go back to, like the 20s and 30s. This just goes back to who's the earliest?
1957.
Is when this goes back. So this goes to Eisenhower is the earliest.
Yeah.
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 So,
but even if you look at market,
which has been an era of general prosperity.
Yeah. But market performance over that since inception has been roughly the same. It's been about 10% return since inception of the financial markets, which was 19
pre-depression, 1919.
Yeah.
That's when women got the vote. So maybe this is, I don't know. But yeah, so I mean that's how I remember 1919 as the verge of World War I.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't want to nitpick on it too much. I understand the general principle. I'm just trying to take the kind of other side and like some of the concerns people might have is,
yeah,
you know, because again, I think the thing, the lesson you're saying is really important. And we've hammered this home several times in terms of the financial markets, that really that's your best angle, is to put your, you know, to diversify your funds, put them in mutual funds and in various other, you know, products, and be smart about that. And don't assume the world's going to end, because really there's no value in that. If the world does end, you have other problems than that your stocks didn't do very well.
Right.
Right. Like, right. So I think you should assume, I don't disagree with that general principle. Assume the world's not going to end. I don't think it's going to end at all. I guess my concern generally that, you know, will affect, excuse me, will affect people's pocketbooks and their ability to make money is, you know, how do we know that the next 4 years, you know, which I do think there's a lot of evidence that's going to be zero economic growth, probably not, you know, maybe some form of stagflation, right? Is what we're probably going to see.
I mean, that's very likely. If we think about the Federal Reserve's already come out and said, we're keeping interest rates low. So we're just trying to stimulate the economy as much as we can, but we're not going to be, you know, manipulating it in such a way that inflation's going to get out of control. They don't want that at all. So yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a very slow growth environment coming out of this. And that's an interesting thing too, because I read something yesterday that said, you know, we had right after the pandemic hit, we had 4 months of pretty significant decline in unemployment, right? Because we had the record-breaking levels of unemployment when the economy first shut down. Mm. And then we've had 4 months where it's been pretty strong. But now it's the we've only gotten back like half of what the jobs we lost.
Yeah, I mean, it's strong in comparison to what we lost.
Exactly. And so now for that other half, it's not going to be nearly as strong as it was during this first 4 month period. And that's what people have to keep in mind as well. And I think that's what you're alluding to, is that this could take a lot longer than maybe people are suggesting, because it is a serious recession that we are finding ourselves in at the moment.
Yeah. And I think maybe, so we can move on to the next point, the thing that people could take away, and my, you know, what I'm trying to hammer on is that, you know, there's figuring out, you know, finances from your own personal perspective and dealing with what you have. So if you have a good job, it's steady, you're not going anywhere, the industry is good, you know, you definitely, I think good advice is, as I mean, for everybody, but the, you know, especially don't, it's not going to be the end of the world. Markets are going to be fine. The president, you know, what happens with the president isn't going to change that much the marketplace, right? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you know, I do think it's credible and prudent to take some kind of extra precautions, because I do think we're going to hit and stay in a broad economic turmoil that is somewhat unforeseeable, right? So it's like, now I don't know how to translate that into finance world, you know, personal finance world. But, you know, maybe that means saving a little bit extra than you normally do to prepare for
cash. Yeah, I think that's your risks will remain elevated. And when risks are elevated, that, and the risks potentially impact your ability to earn an income.
Yeah,
that's when the prudent choice is to increase your cash reserves, because cash is your best friend when times are tough.
Yeah. So maybe that's how to translate what I'm trying to get across for a personal, you know, the personal listener is, you know, unless you're in the most steady of job markets, like your field is, nothing can happen to your job, like for whatever reason, right? Like you're indispensable. If that's really true, I think then you're fine. But I think for a lot of us, there is a kind of dispensability that might happen where, you know, companies might have to make hard decisions, and it's possible that you could lose your job in a way that you wouldn't have under a better economy, right?
Like right.
That's all I'm trying to get across, I think.
I think that's a good point. And that's also a good segue, the conversation between cash and investments for the next chart. Okay. And so the next chart is taking a look at, you know,
so this is truth two.
This is truth number two.
Investors are better off staying fully invested.
Yeah. Okay. And we've talked about this a lot on this show about how you don't try to time the financial markets, because history suggests that just doesn't work, because markets are not predictable. And also the risk of not participating or trying to time the market actually is worse for you than just staying invested. So this chart takes a look at, since inception of the financial markets, this goes all the way back to 1900. It takes a look at, if I put $10,000 at that time in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, that's an index similar to the S&P 500, but the Dow Jones is primarily made up of technology companies. So if I put $10,000 in 1900 in the Dow, today that $10,000 would be worth almost $7 million. That's the gray line that extends way up. But that would be if my holding period, I just bought and held it that whole time, right? So does that make sense?
Yeah. So you put $10,000 in 1900, that's how much it would be worth today.
It'd be worth $7 million today.
That's with inflation?
That's with the that's in real dollars.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the other two lines, we get these questions a lot from clients that say, well, if a Republican wins, I think I'm just going to pull all my money out and sit in cash for a while. Or if a Democrat wins, I'm going to do the same thing. And so what this chart's trying to say is, well, if you did that, you can see that the other line, the other two lines, the blue and the red line that have the two little, the representation. Yeah,
the donkey and the elephant.
Yeah, the donkey and the elephant.
Democratic Party and the Republican Party.
Essentially, you would have, if you operated your personal financial plan according to that logic, because an election happens every 4 years, if you were not participating in the stock market, that same $10,000 would be worth maybe a couple $100,000 today, if you had not participated for fear of what was happening with administration and letting that influence your decision to participate in the financial markets.
I see.
Yeah. So we know this is logical, but it is helpful to see it in real terms over such a long period of time, to see that financial markets do their jobs over long periods of time. And we have to focus on the longer term perspective, less so on the short term, because those periods of volatility due to an election every 4 years or whatever can't be an influencer for you not to be participating in your financial plan for the long term in the ways that you're supposed to be.
Well, and this might be a good time to bring up something that I think goes unmentioned a lot of times, cause especially during the presidential election, because people are so focused, is to remember that there is a Senate and a House of Representatives and a judicial system. Like, we have checks and balances in our country for a reason. They may not be perfect at the moment for other reasons we could talk about some other day. But, you know, I saw like a chart a while back where the best thing for America in so many ways, so many variables, economically, foreign, you know, affairs. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat today. Economically, investor-wise, you know, foreign affairs, healthcare, like everything you can think of just flourishing as a country, is something like a Democrat president, Republican Senate.
Yes.
Primarily.
A mixed administration where one party runs the White House and another party runs the Senate is the best environment for economic growth and market performance.
Yeah, I think they kind of even each other out. And some of the worst times we've had is when it's like a sweep of Democrats or a sweep of Republicans, right? That's when we tend to make, you know, that's when they tend to have so much power. They can, all their ideas, they could just like throw them at the wall, throw money, whatever they want, because they could pass anything. And I think, you know, if I could praise our founders, I think one thing they recognized was that it was a good idea to make it hard or difficult for politicians to get things done sometimes. Yep. Like sometimes making it too easy to get things done can, you know, like I know that's what we all say we want, to politicians to get things done, but sometimes that can lead to a lot of problems and turmoils and, you know, you're overturning a whole set of laws all of a sudden. And it's like, oh, it's not like a kind of few minor tax changes. It's like you've overturned the system or you've, you know, implemented a welfare system out of nowhere or something. And it's like that is like, okay, that's a big change all of a sudden. Yeah. And that can lead to massive short and long-term devastation. So I'm just saying, like, you know, that's one thing to consider that, you know, is important here, that, you know, presidential elections are not everything. We have and what you're making with this truth, investors are better off staying fully invested, is, you know, that's just a general, you know, good principle,
right? And you can see it historically working. And I love that you said that, talking about checks and balances, because we should go to the third truth right now, because it actually kind of complements what you said. And the third truth is, we do not radically re-engineer the U.S. economy.
Yeah.
So there is, you know, a lot of conversations, especially now, I've heard a lot of things about, you know, well, can you imagine what the tax laws are going to be under a Biden presidency? Or can you imagine what's going to happen to social
security? Yeah, that I think people do that all the time, and that's completely wrong.
Right. And so I think it's important that we reiterate that there are checks and balances, because I feel like the environment, the way that we gather our information and our news today makes everything feel new and concerning. And
you're 100% right. And that's somewhat frustrating to me, because I think so much of it is like, you only think that this thing is new because you've never read about it before, but actually what's happening happened under Obama. It happened under Clinton, this type of thing has been happening for 50 years or something. I mean, you're freaking out about something we're doing in Israel now or something. It's like, what are you talking about? We've been in, you know, Afghanistan since 2001. Like, you know, it's a 20-year war. Like, and I just, people freak out about all these things like it's just happening. It's like, hold on a second. Now, that's not to say there aren't some, like, I think a lot of the things going on, there are things that are somewhat, we haven't seen them for 40, 50 years. We haven't seen them since like the riots of the 60s and 70s. Like,
right.
We think that what's going on now is, you know, the worst, but actually terrorism, at home terrorism, riots, turmoil was worse in the 60s and 70s, especially in the 70s. So,
and right around an election.
Right around election time. Yeah. So, you know, it's not to say that this is good and we should be accepting of it, but I think it's just such an important point to reiterate, is that we don't, you know, a Republican president, if that does happen, if we, you know, get another one for another 4 years, I think there's some things that's not going to be the best for it, but it's true that it's not like all of a sudden everything's going to be thrown asunder and we're going to get the worst, you know, thing ever, or the opposite. Yeah. If we get, you know, it's not like everybody always threatens, or so many people threaten to go to Canada or something. It's like, America's not going to change that much, that dramatically at this point.
No. And so if you look at here's just a fun fact, all presidents have to have control of Congress, and our system of checks and balances actually resulted in the last two presidents getting one signature achievement before losing the House. So historically speaking, the House changes political parties as soon as midterms. So you only ever have a 2-year time period, usually, if there's a full sweep of one party running everything, it only lasts for 2 years. So,
yeah, I mean, just as an example, that's when we got the Affordable Health Care Act, was in the first 2 years of Obama's administration.
Right.
And Trump has done, I think, nothing major in that regard, by the way.
No, he has not.
He did like some minor tax things.
He did do a piece of tax legislation, but it doesn't, it's not at the same level as like
the Affordable Health Care
pieces of legislation. Yeah. So this chart shows the composition of U.S. GDP growth. So how the economy.
This
grows.
Is the one on the top.
Yeah.
The one that's like green, blue, dark blue.
Blue and dark blue. So this goes back to 1957 again. And basically what this is showing is these massive pieces of legislation that were passed. So 1965, they created Medicare and Medicaid. 1981 was the Economic Recovery Tax Act. 96, Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Act. I'm not even sure I know exactly what that is. And then in 2010, the Affordable Care Act. In 96. That would have been Bush, right? Or Clinton. Yeah. Okay. But the point here is that, right. And so when you hear people say that piece of legislation is going to destroy the economy, right?
Yeah.
It's going to ruin everything. Well, actually, they have very little impact on the U.S. economy, even these major pieces of legislation. Now, there are components, obviously, that are beneficial to people or not beneficial to certain people due to legislation. But what I'm talking about is actual economic growth. What happens with economic growth when huge pieces of legislation are passed? And really, it doesn't really change. The composition of our economy is still more than 50% driven by the consumer, period. So whether the legislation people are calling for that it's going to quadruple government spending or it's going to ruin business investment, that actually doesn't prove to be true because we have instances, many instances in history of major pieces of legislation that have passed and it didn't change how the economy still grows.
Yeah. And that's the second graph underneath it.
Yeah, the second one is actually the stock market, so the S&P 500
performance. Yeah.
So the top one is
but it hasn't
composition
affected
of GDP growth, and then the second one is the market continues to grow. Yeah, there's a lot of volatility, but that's, again, looking at such a short-term versus a really long-term time horizon.
Yeah. Okay.
So we do not radically re-engineer the economy every time a new piece of legislation is passed. It's not true.
That's true. That is true. That is the third truth. What's the fourth truth?
The fourth truth. The historical narrative is not always as you remember it. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. So this takes a look at when a certain president came into office, what the trend for a certain metric was supposed to be during his what it was forecast to be during the president's administration and what it actually was. So let's take Barack Obama for a minute. When Barack Obama was elected, there were big concerns that his policies would cause massive inflation on the U.S. economy. So inflation is a huge, rapid increase in the cost of goods and services. So if we look at this chart for Obama, the blue straight line was what the projected inflation rate was going to be under his administration. Actual inflation is that choppy blue line. So you can see that everything that was said about what he was doing was not actually what happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at President Trump, here we have, this was under his Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. The idea behind that was that it was going to stimulate business investment because it was going to cut taxes for corporations. The blue line, again, that straight line was what was forecast to occur for business investment. And actually, business investment has fallen under his administration, which tells us that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act didn't necessarily accomplish what people said it was going to accomplish. So this is, and this, there's one for Reagan. So under Reagan, he was supposed to decimate income for the lower 50, the bottom half of the country due to some of the things that he was proposing at the time. So if you look at actual earnings during that time period for that group of people, they actually did a lot better earnings-wise than what was forecasted. Hmm. So we have four different scenarios here, both with forecasts from experts, and none of them proved to actually play out that way. So the historical narrative is not always as you remember it.
Well, I think that's a good principle in general, is another good principle in general, not just for presidents, but people predicting the future, especially with any kind of specificity, are almost always wrong.
Yep.
Like, they're almost 100% wrong. You know, I tell this to people so many times when it's like, you know, if you want to look at, like, okay, doom and gloom in the environment, well, go back in the, you know, like, that's not to say there's not bad things going on, but, you know, go back into the history of all these people making models, and you'll see for 60 years, they've been making models, and they're always wrong. Right. And you see this and see this with the economy, where it's like and you see this, like, broadly with the whole, our generation's going to kill and destroy the entire planet type thing, and everyone's going to die on our watch. And there is this tendency to predict the future and be wrong all the time. And that's not to say, again, that's not to say that bad things didn't happen, right? Obviously there was war. I mean, right now we have a pandemic that has killed 200,000 Americans and 1 million people. So it's not as though that is a huge, you know, when we look back at that in the future, that's going to be a massive, like, blip, you know, in the moment of, wow, what happened there type thing. Yeah. Right. And so it's not to undermine those things, but, you know, again, nobody predicted that. Right. And so this is one of the things that we talked about and you talk about and push all the time is, you know, with this idea of the trying to time the markets, trying to figure out when it's going to be at its lowest and when it's going to be at its highest. You can't do that. I mean, you could not have foreseen any of these, you know, the good stuff that's going to happen. Sometimes presidents have weird, wacky ideas that don't work out. And then, but then some other variable comes in and there's, you know, a tech revolution that saves everything. And now we have the FAANG and the stuff, you know, like, we have this mega, you know, corporations that are kind of saving the economy in a lot of ways and saving the market in so many ways. And so, you know, the people couldn't have seen that either, right? That was a little hard to predict in 2000.
Yeah.
So I just think it's a good principle to keep in mind.
Absolutely. You know, and remember that you might have just discovered this, kind of like what you said at the beginning of the show. You might have just learned about this fact or something, but it's happened consistently throughout history, whether you knew about it or not. So, you know, when you think you can predict the market, people have been trying to predict the market for decades and they failed. So that's where using history as a guide is beneficial, and listening to every prediction or projection that someone's putting out there with a grain of salt.
Yeah. So I guess, like, one of the questions, you know, we have one more to go.
Which is kind of similar. Yeah.
Yeah. Signature legislation is infrequent and its impact often unexpected. That's the fifth truth and the last one we're going to do for this episode. And, you know, I'm wondering, like, so what other things can people do? Like, if the advice is only just diversify and don't worry about anything, right? Like, I don't think that's 100% accurate either. I mean, yes, you want to diversify and invest, but there are, you know, things in life that you should be aware of and think about.
Yeah. Right?
Does that make sense? Like, there Absolutely. Are, for instance, there are reasons to study history and there are trends, you know, like, I think it's an open, for me, I think it's somewhat of an open question how bad things can get. Like I said before, I do think stagflation is a real possibility, which is not a good time. Now, that's not, again, this is not to de-emphasize the importance of diversifying what you can, but, you know, being aware of that maybe will change people's perspective, you know, because, like I said, if all we're saying is just diversify and don't worry about anything else, that's not helpful, right?
Right.
In terms of living your life and dealing with the anxiety, you know, people, anxiety itself is real, right? It affects the market. Like, even if it's not the thing that people are afraid of, even if that's not real, the anxiety is real.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so go ahead.
I think a way to answer that question, I'll give you an example of something that I've been doing with my clients right now, because we're heading towards this election. I like to acknowledge, obviously, that anxiety is real because I suffer from anxiety too. And so what I do is I stress test my clients' financial plans. And I think we might have talked about stress testing before. So, but what I try to do is I say, okay, what are like the two highest level concerns right now in the immediate term that could impact or derail your financial plan? So for this scenario in particular, I've stress tested financial plans to say if we had a market collapse of more than 10% for 2 years in a row, right? If the markets were thrown into chaos, I can stress test the client's financial plan so that they see, okay, well, if that did happen, right, like we might have to make a few minor adjustments, but really you're still in good shape. The other thing is tax increases, right? I've heard a lot about the people being concerned about all of this stimulus and how we're going to pay it back, and that tax rates right now are low, so they're only going to have move in one direction in the future. And so I can stress test that for a client's plan too. So I just say, you know, let's raise tax rates by 5% across the board and see what happens to your financial plan. So those types of things can at least not provide an actual answer, but it provides you a general guide as to where you're headed and gives you a little bit of comfort to know, like, okay, if one of these two terrible scenarios played out exactly the way that it's being modeled, I would still be okay. I think that's where the power of trying to predict is helpful, but not predicting under the context of like, this is what's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I like the idea of stress test. And, you know, I think another thing is that it's helpful to have these ideas and, you know, the truths in place. And also, you know, we've done shows on, you know, some of the negative things that can happen with, you know, that's going on in the world, like student loan crisis and coronavirus, you know, and the stimulus. And we've talked about that a lot. And so, you know, this is just one episode kind of focusing on this aspect. And I think it's useful to keep what you just said in mind and having your financial advisor stress test in different variables and, you know, end of the world, not literally, but, you know, quite the worst case scenario type scenarios that you can imagine and figuring out how to work with that. And then the other one is like having, you know, fixing your mentality. So if you were, you know, contemplating quitting your job to start that business, that side job or that, you know, Etsy thing, which is great. You know, anybody who's listening to shows know I'm all for that, but maybe consider having more in the fund than you know, in the bank than you might normally do because of what, you know, we're saying that it's going, if it doesn't work out, you know, the Etsy thing doesn't work out or, you know, whatever job you want or whatever, you know, business side you want to do, side venture you want to do. The chances of re-getting another job is going to be harder in the future. And that is that's a truth to take home in terms of the negatives. And so it's, you know, that I think is like one thing to keep in mind.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. This fifth and last truth.
Signature. So the fifth and last truth here is just kind of a reiteration of what we saw on some of the other ones, but signature legislation is infrequent and its impact often unexpected. And this just comes back to that narrative, right? The narrative we keep hearing of this candidate or this candidate is going to ruin the country because of this piece of legislation. Well, actually, they've said that historically about everything. And if you look here, there's two examples, the most recent example. So the first one is the Affordable Care Act under President Obama. It was signed into law during the first 2 years of his presidency. And then the Republicans took over majority in the House during the midterms, right after it was signed into law. And that piece of legislation, the Affordable Care Act, was rumored to be, it's going to kill jobs. It's going to kill small and medium-sized businesses from being able to create jobs because it requires them to offer this health care to their employees. So if you actually look, though, from 2011 all the way to 2019, 8.6 million jobs were added to medium-sized firms. And that was the largest increase in small and mid-sized jobs in history. So that's a completely different outcome than what people were projecting. Just a good data point to remember. And then the second example is Trump's Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. The idea behind that was, like we said earlier, to try to stimulate growth in the business sector and business investment, right? But what ended up happening was the majority of those tax savings corporations used to either pay dividends to their shareholders, or they did share buybacks where they went out into the marketplace and they bought back shares of stock so that their share price would increase. So they didn't actually take that money and reinvest it back into the company or in new machinery or equipment. The adverse effect happened. So that just tells you big pieces of legislation. They don't happen a lot. And many times in history, we've seen that the impact is not what we were expecting it to be.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's interesting. I think that kind of hammers home the point of, you know, because this is legislation we're talking about, obviously, which is, you know, something a president kind of has influence over, but he actually is in the executive branch. So right. He executes it. So it's important to understand that there is a difference, you know, between passing a law and executing it. Although I think, you know, as the leader of the party, that's where a lot of the president's power in legislation can come from. Right.
Sure.
But it, what this is saying is that the expectations are often different. And what I think, maybe this is a good way to end, is that is a good point to remember that even with these graphs and with the graphs that you're hearing on CNN or Fox or whatever you're listening to, that these only show you two or three variables. There, I think you could probably find 100,000 variables that are relevant to why jobs went up from Obama. Right. So a lot of people, and this is what's really challenging about this is, you know, because one of the reasons jobs went up was a flourishing tech world. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, a lot of small consultant firms or something that probably flourished during this time that wouldn't have existed beforehand. You know, there's a lot of space, like there's actually medium-sized space companies. Like I had a friend in California and, you know, she was always going from, you know, medium-sized space company to medium-sized space company, you know, that were building like pieces for SpaceX or for other. So my point is that it's hard to, you know, in terms of the predicting aspect is there's so many variables that go into it that the president, although a big one and important for a lot of reasons, in my view, it's much more important for the long, long term. So
yeah,
that's what I mean by the ending this episode on this thing. It's like in the short term, whoever gets elected is not that relevant to your personal finances. And it's not really the reason to think about how am I going to vote, for instance, or who should I vote for in the Senate or the House or president, right? My view personally is like you're saying, it won't affect your wallet that much. But what does happen is if you look at where the country is going in the next 25 years, that I think is where presidents can have a pretty big impact.
Sure. You know,
the affordable health care is going to affect us more 10 years from now than it does today.
Right.
I don't even think we've implemented it fully. Not I understand. Like, I think they're still figuring it out, but
parts of it.
Yeah. Parts of it. Yeah. So
that's cheery. A good point. I like that. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So that's kind of the message. Like I'm just trying to, through illustrating these different variables, because you're right, there's a million different ways we could evaluate all of this data. But what this data shows us through these variables is that in the present, the most immediate future, you don't need to make financial planning decisions based off of who's going to be elected.
Yes, absolutely. That is the core message.
Yes.
Good job.
All right, guys. Love it. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Jake of All Trades. Be sure to check us out on social media by searching for @Jake's2Cents and check out the blog at jakes2cents.com. Thanks. We'll see you next time.
Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Fixed insurance products and services offered through CES Insurance Agency. Actual performance and results will vary. These interviews do not constitute a recommendation as to the suitability of any investment for any person or persons having circumstances similar to those portrayed. Consult a financial advisor regarding your specific circumstances.